Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Oh, well, we are here, having taken it away to come here. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm Elvira, and my co-hostess Deb is making our jolly jollies for what we're doing right now, since this is our show during Christmas time, and it's just after Christmas for us, and there's, you know, Hanukkah, and what is it, Kwanzaa. I think we've got a lot of different things all happening right now before we get the new year. And I actually talked to a client, and I explained that we're at the Julian calendar end of the year, new year, which was set up a long time ago for taxes. But I said, we have to go back. And I went through the different ones of the new year things that have happened, you know, throughout the last several months. And they were kind of laughing with me. I said, yeah, you can pick your time of when you're going to start, end an old year and begin a new year, kind of a thing. So, but other than that, it's our basic topic is solitude of spirit, which is part of our Yuletide spirits for December. And I will be launching into that after we discuss what we were doing for the last week before the show. And I think that for the most part, preparing for Christmas in one form or another, you know, for at least me and my family. And I know you and your family, because we've talked. And, you know, Christmas was, well, celebrate it with my daughter and her husband, because she goes to her dad's house and stepmother's house, and they celebrate Christmas Eve. And I think even though I have been, you know, when I visited, I would go, they would invite me. But I have a feeling that it's been much easier now that I am living here, that I pull back for the traditions that they had established for many years before I made my decision to live here. And so I, you know, they had their thing, and I sat and I just kind of went hog on every Christmas movie I could find and just basically sat with the dogs and my Christmas tree lit. And I think I watched, I've gone through Santa Claus, the Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2, which is a Netflix thing with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. And then obviously standard ones that are old ones that I grew up with in black and white. But then I kind of started adding. So I added all the movies with Tim Allen that are the Santa Claus, and even his TV series that they did through Disney. And Christmas, I definitely, Elf. And then I kind of put Polar Express on as the one that I finally fell asleep to. So it was like... I was really into that. And then, you know, the next morning, of course, Christmas, the dogs are looking at me going, do we have to get up? And I'm going, no, we don't. And it was decided that I would get over to my daughter's house. And, you know, I had gotten all the Santa gifts in plastic bag delivered to her. you know, in secret so she could make sure they got to the tree. And then the ones that I was bringing or that I had, she already had in front. So I got myself, you know, dressed, and I FaceTimed my stepdaughter in California, and we opened presents on FaceTime and, you know, back and forth, and her her daughter and her husband. And, you know, we had a lot of fun, and then I kind of got everybody settled, and I went off to my daughter's, and then we basically, you know, started the long haul of unwrapping gifts as between us, and then as the different people came in. And it was finally, I think it was like 3:30, they were making breakfast for dinner, for Christmas dinner. And so we stuffed ourselves with all kinds of eggs and, you know, hash browns and waffles. And, I mean, you name it, they had it. And coffee and, you know, all this. And it was a lot of fun. And I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And, of course, I got, well, Santa got this beautiful, beautiful little unicorn toy for my granddaughter. And then the different things I got her, she was all excited about. The Barbies, I mean, they had, it was like Barbie in disguise. And it was, they had them dressed, they were dressed as different things. So she wanted a grumpy Barbie. So it was a bear, kind of a little blue and white bear that was the outfit. And she was, you know, like, soft and cute, and then it was grumpy. But I was like, if that's what she wanted, maybe it's sort of a way of, you know, being okay when she feels grumpy. And, you know, it was just amazing, the things that were kind of brought out, and family and different conversations and, you know, stuff. So it was really fun. And then I got to drive home in the fog. See, we were talking about that earlier. And you know, not only is fog hard during the day, but at night it's like, oh my gosh. And, you know, so it was a challenge. And then by the time I got home and got everything in and got everybody organized, we all went and sat in the bedroom and cuddled, and the dogs and I, and, you know, just, again, watched more Christmas movies. And that was where I finally just crashed out. So what was your time like?
Oh, wow. That, well, first I'll just weigh in with a couple of, I have some Christmas movie pop culture favorites that I always, you know, watch during that week of Christmas. Solstice and Yuletide or all that, you know. But I actually, I just have to mention these two, like, newer things that I watched that I really liked. One of them was a movie that just came out. It's called Dear Santa. And it was about this kid with dyslexia who accidentally wrote Dear Satan.
And
he mailed it. And so, anyway, I won't tell the whole plot, but it's so funny. It's very cute. And, yeah, and it and I like how it ended. It was a very cute movie.
Oh, wow.
Jack Black did a good job at being a demon. So, and then there was this other movie that was on Netflix that I thought, you know, I truly believe Die Hard, the original with Bruce Willis, the first one. I believe that's a Christmas movie. I have no doubt. So now Netflix put out this other movie that's kind of, you know, in the same wave as, you know, Die Hard, but it's called Carry On, you know, as in your carry-on that you take on the plane.
Right.
And I saw the preview and I thought, it probably sucks, but I'll watch it. You know, just, I was intrigued enough. And I actually liked it. I loved it. I thought it was really, it was a fun movie. It was very fast-paced. And it was about the security guy who works at the airport. And it made me think of my niece, Sarah, who is, she works at the airport here, and she is an airplane mechanic.
Oh my.
And wow. yeah. And so I actually got together with her and a bunch of other family on Christmas Eve, and I told her, I said, watch that movie. and give me your cheek of it afterwards, just because she works at the airport. But but anyway, it just, the past week or couple weeks has been like this kind of mass holiday craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And my family usually has a little drama, just to spice things up a little, but not like major drama. But this year, oh my God, there was like major family drama all over the place.
Oh my gosh.
And I suspect the astral weather of December 2024 might be influencing some of it. A lot of things need to be built up, but then destroyed in some way to make way for the new. And so I think some of that might have been going on. And there's two dark moons this December. The first one was on December 1st, and then the second one's on December 30th. Mm-hmm. And so these cosmic bookends of dark moons, I think, really kind of emphasize that, new beginnings, especially as far as the family was going, I'll tell you. And then, then we had, for the first part of December, there was the Mercury. But then we've also had the Mars retrograde, which is really weird, and I'm sure has really affected me a lot. There's been a lot of just strange swirling energy with myself and others, where people have said things they maybe normally wouldn't have said, and then end up having to take that back or apologize later on. So this month has been kind of whirly, and, and the energy has me feeling a little off balance, but it's letting me know that it's time to slow down and reassess boundaries. And, I know everyone's being affected by, the whole Pluto entering Aquarius, with that whole collective turning point. And so I hear a lot of astrologers saying that this is a good time to slow down and reflect on where you've been, where you're going, and just to kind of reorganize our energy. And so, I see a lot of this also reflected in the type of work I've been doing for clients lately, too. a lot of cleansings and road openers and peaceful homes and all that. And so I think with that thought, that would segue really well into our topic tonight.
Definitely. And solitude of spirit, when we get together on Monday and we discuss these things and we talk about it, it's fascinating how, suddenly we find things coming together for us either and personally as much as anything else. But technically, we'll kind of go with getting a definition of what solitude is, in terms of that. So basically, true solitude is being alone in your own head space, enjoying your own company, and giving yourself quiet time to reflect. And that is also for positive states of mind and feeling and, effectively bringing about beneficial thoughts, feelings, actions for yourself. Now, obviously, everyone goes, well, solitude, it's loneliness, right? Alone, you're alone. And technically, the definition for loneliness is a sense of isolation that persists even when other people are around or present. So solitude is a choice to be alone and to use the time either to reflect or simply enjoy one's own company. And I found it interesting because I kind of went and I said, okay, so these are the two words, but what about spiritual solitude? And that becomes a practice of intentionally withdrawing from external distractions to spend time alone in a quiet reflection. It could be deep connection with one's own spirituality, which could involve prayer, meditation, journaling, or simply just being present with one's own inner self and allowing for deeper connection to, quote, higher power, unquote, and personal meaning. So I found that we sometimes do this. I mean, like we go take a bath and we get a nice warm bath and we do all the fun things for it and we get, you know, some alone time, we'll call it. And that is a piece of solitude. And I know that sometimes we find that going on our walks or, you know, doing something that is not necessarily just sitting and staring or closing our eyes and doing meditation. That is solitude. But it's the point of fact of being within ourselves and being able to point where we, you know, the head distractions are running around, which, you know, our mind starts going into the bills we have to pay and the groceries we have to get and the family we have to, you know, deal with and pick up or whatever. And then suddenly we hit this other part. And it becomes a quietness, and it sometimes needs a little boost, and that's why, you know, you journal or you meditate or maybe you do yoga or you start to do just a walk out in nature or, you know, in that form where you're with yourself. But then you connect with the higher vibration or the inner vibration or however you're going to describe it. And you can feel it settle. It's kind of, there's this moment of just settling in. And I know that there are different things, and I will mention a couple, and then I'm going to turn this over to you. But the interesting thing I find, and this can sound strange, I find playing just standard old-fashioned solitaire, something that does that for me. And it, because I'm the logical brain is working and working and doing this, and then suddenly I feel if for some reason I just drop and then I stop, and I can, you know, just sort of like I'll just sit there and I might even stare out at the pretty trees or, you know, close my eyes and breathe or do something, and then I hit that point where I feel the bigger, a bigger expanse. But it's like, it's almost like when I take my dogs to the groomers, they're like absolutely neurotic all the way in on the drive. And I can't tell you, you know, why, because it's a groomers. They don't do bad things. They get to play with a bunch of dogs and, you know, but anyway, but when I bring them home, because they played with all these dogs, they are so quiet and just like they, I get them in the carrier and they go to sleep. And it's the same kind of thing. It's because they're wearing out their physical being and then they're coming into quiet. So I'm wearing out my mind, the thinking mind, so I can get into this other space. What do you do? And how do you see solitude and, you know, all of the different permeations of it?
I guess, you know, I was thinking, when I was thinking about what to talk about, you know, I was just kind of thinking about, you know, what is, you know, solitude versus isolation versus loneliness. And I took a quick glance at Wikipedia and quickly sped past that because Wikipedia doesn't do a very good job at separating what those things are, really. What I was thinking is I feel like we have like almost like a silent epidemic of loneliness among many people around the world. And everywhere, you know, there's people walking around as though they are contained within a plastic bubble, you know, like preventing any like true contact with others. And we might find ourselves, you know, sometimes feeling cut off from the closeness with other people, other women or men, sometimes with our children or our partners, or sometimes with our coworkers or our neighbors. You know, and then many of us have developed ways to survive this by learning how to play the role, by looking efficient and capable and making the outsides of ourselves look good. So then, you know, what do we do? Do we risk letting others know how we feel? If we share what's going on inside, you know, will others think we are strange, or will they judge us? Or maybe they might look down on us. And so these are like the types of fears that come up that I think are real common, and that will have us slowly kind of spiral down into isolation. Because we're social animals. But we can become feral if we remain in the fear and the isolation too long. And so we all get lonely at some point. And I think that loneliness is like a symptom, a loss of connection. And so that might be, you know, due to situations or conditions changing, you know, like physical isolation, you know, moving to a new location, or the loss of a significant other person in your life, loss of a friend, or, you know, so many different types of changes that can happen. But I think we have to be careful, because some of us might confuse solitude with falling into like romanticizing the pain of loneliness and glorify it. And then some of us might seek out temporary relief from loneliness by using drugs or alcohol or sex, you know, but I mean, that's relief, and it's usually, but it's usually very fleeting. And by seeking comfort for our pain in this way, we can actually often perpetuate our feeling of loneliness and feel worse afterwards. You know, so so breaking through that barrier of like the plastic bubble of loneliness surrounding us is, you know, just to let someone know us. And this can be like incredibly difficult, yet just like the simple action of saying, "I am lonely," to another person, you know, usually makes us feel slightly less alone, just saying it, or identifying it within ourselves. Or we might channel this loneliness into a creative force. And to me, that's kind of more getting into then tapping into the aspect of solitude. You know, rather than just sitting with the loneliness, we might journal or write a poem or even write a book, depending on how long that lasts. Or depending, you know, on our creative inspirations and talents, we might sing or dance or, you know, practice perfecting our abilities with a musical instrument. Well, when we channel like that loneliness or isolation, or even, you know, just quiet spans of time into solitude, it sometimes has like a real magical quality of leading us back into ourselves. And that can be a time of reflection and transformation. Yeah. Some of us might not be comfortable spending alone time with ourselves, which might be a byproduct of our time. Because we're, you know, during this time and age, we are constantly bombarded with outer stimulation, minute-to-minute news updates, messages on social media. You can't even pick up, you know, your phone without a bunch of, you know, different things on your news feed floating down. And then, you know, a lot of people have TVs blaring in the background. And I know that a lot of sources indicate in times past that the day surrounding the winter solstice was celebrated in a very different way depending which point in history you're looking at. And so, you know, some view the day surrounding the winter solstice as a time of descent and rest. So this is a time of being in the home and bringing in warmth and going within ourselves to reflect on all that's been through the past year. And we can also do this in the same way with nature. And when we look at the animal kingdom around us, it's also that time of hibernation to rest and reflect and to renew our hearts and minds. You know, and this, I'll just say quick, because I know we're getting close to a break, but this, like, the modern time leading up to the Yuletide season is sometimes overwhelming for many of us. And it can be overwhelming whether we're, like, in a good place or a bad place, but because, like, expectations can run high. You know, people around us might be sweet or sour. And then there's the astrological weather can also add another layer of unexpected twists and turns. So it's kind of like the relative time of quiet in the days after all the solstice and the Christmases and the Hanukkah and the Kwanzaa, before, you know, we get kind of closer to the traditional or the calendar New Year's Eve, you know. And to me, I really welcome that time after, you know, just as a time of solitude and to reflect and just to, you know, just get that quiet. To me, it's so important just to revitalize. And it's interesting, one last thought, is the meaning of the Latin root word soul, this, it can mean sun, it can mean alone, or it can mean one. And so there's a lot of words, you know, relevant words like solitude or solstice or solace, you know, that all begin with soul. And
wow.
Very soul time of year.
Yes, very soulful. Well, I think right now we'll probably do our commercial. So, Nagashiva, can you break us away?
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
That's always so livening. So basically, I'm going to turn this back over to Deb and let her kind of have a little bit more conversation on solitude and spiritual solitude and all of that. And then we will, when I have my time back again, we will follow a new train of something that came up, and hopefully we will enthuse you to take a look at that situation. So, Deb, go for it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. So, digging just a little deeper down into solitude is, you know, true solitude, it's about, I think, about stillness. And so, it's about like an energetic stillness. And I don't believe that we can always create like a profound stillness, but we can allow it and then we can move into it. and be receptive to it. I think that's why this, to me, this is like the perfect time of year to receive it. And the energy of solitude is very spiritual. And some of us might be uncomfortable by such a stillness because we're not familiar with it. So it is like being quiet and being alone with our own spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we tend to be action-oriented and concerned about showing results in the shortest amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
The world at large has emphasized this outlook.
okay.
And some of us might try to escape that inward wave of solitude by remaining endlessly busy to keep the stillness at a comfortable distance. And some of us might become, you know, workaholics to avoid coming face to face with our emerging spirit. So if solitude is overwhelming, we can change our reactive patterns by just allowing ourselves a little quiet, like in small doses. You know, maybe at first, and we embrace it just for a couple of minutes. Some of us might be more comfortable connecting with the stillness, you know, in nature. I think it's easier to connect there.
Yes.
And the stillness in a moment of solitude is sacred. And it's much like meditation because it kind of connects us to the divine or to the higher self. And one way we can be receptive to solitude is by pushing aside any kind of like busyness and efficiency and maybe turn off the phones and devices for a little bit. You know, maybe purposely do it for 10 minutes or an hour. Or if we're really, you know, wanting it, maybe for an afternoon. And So when we allow like empty spaces in our lives and allow a little idleness and solitude to kind of percolate, we become so receptive to inspiration. So something real simple that I do is when I wake up in the morning, I do not like to turn on any devices. I have a couple of meditation books, you know, the kind that has like a page for each day of the year with some good thoughts on it. And so, you know, I'll get up, you know, brush my teeth, wash my face or whatever, and get some coffee. I'm a coffee drinker. you know, then I'll sit and read one or more of these good positive thoughts just to start my day, and then I'll reflect on them as I drink my coffee. And, you know, for me, I know that I am most receptive and most creative earlier in the day. You know, before I start talking to other people, before I start hearing the voices of the airwaves of social media or radio or TV. When I do this, when I take like that little block of time and just allow myself to be quiet and maybe, you know, reflect on some positive thoughts, it's like I'm feeding my day. And when I do this, I have a better day. And I do this on most mornings, but then sometimes I fall off track, you know, like around the crazy inducing tides of energy that flow through some parts of December. So I like to take advantage of these quieter days. For me, at least they're quieter. I know different folks might have different get-togethers or holiday-type things that are going on. But for me, I really like to take advantage of what end up being quieter days for me before New Year's Eve. Just to embrace solitude and as a way of helping me get back on track and feeling more balanced. You know, and I make more spiritual progress with myself when I have regular times of solitude and reflection. And these are times when I become like more receptive to inspiration and to kind of like a deeper knowing. And also to that, you know, to that part of life that I don't control. It's like I'm more okay with mm-hmm. that, you know. And for me, I know that, you know, like spiritual progress comes only for me. I know it only comes when I make room for it in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think our solitude is a relationship with ourselves. And if we can embrace it and our defenses against it aside, that solitude will spontaneously pop out without even planning it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think solitude might come in tiny doses, or it might come in larger ways. It might come during like silent meditation, or it might come when we're driving down the street, or sometimes it might come just during a random conversation. But the message that spontaneously erupts from solitude, you know, it might be a painful truth, such as acting like a child, having a temper tantrum, or it might erupt as something more frightening, like you are deeply loved by another person.
Mm-hmm.
So then it helps immensely for me to be gentle with myself. And also, I think if we're able to let another trusted, put that word in parentheses, trusted person,
mm-hmm.
If we're able to let that person know what our messages are that we're getting in solitude, or if we are able to journal some of it, and when we process the messages we get in solitude, it helps us to accept our own imperfections in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, some real simple, ultra simple
mm-hmm.
ways that I try to do that. How about you, Elvira?
Well, gosh, it's interesting because there was something here I was going to share, and I'm kind of, you know, a couple of things. It's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
One, we have certain things that are part of the time of the year, and I know that, you know, different themes and movies and, you know, stories are put out there. And of course, the most mm-hmm. famous that has come about is A Christmas Carol, and, you know, talks about Ebenezer Scrooge and miserly, and, you know, it creates a situation where transformation occurs into this loving, compassionate being. But really what it is, it isn't about something being magically injected. It's about the fact that it's been frozen over. So that goodness has been frozen mm-hmm. over. And through what actually becomes his time of solitude with the spirits of the past, the present, and the future, what he does is he unfreezes it. And so as you're talking about, you know, time being with oneself, and suddenly, you know, experiencing different little, you know, things that happen that, you know, become awarenesses and all. This is part of that time frame. And it's a, mm-hmm. you know, it's obviously a story and it has this great, you know, ending and everything. But it's about unfreezing, you know, our goodness, but unfreezing mm-hmm. the parts of ourselves that we have been afraid of, and so we freeze them and we put them, you know, aside, and then we again more and more become alone. And instead, when things happen, whether it's consciously or some kind of a situation where we experience this kind of unfreezing, you start to get into being aware of your power, your energy, who you are, what is, you know, what our connection with, you know, spirit in whatever form we, you know, it comes to us. And I think that that's one of those things that has been to the fore through storytelling. But it's also interesting for me because somewhere along the line, I wound up, and I have no idea, a friend of one of my clients obviously decided to send me something because we were talking about, one, being alone or being on our own and as women choosing a different path that instead of, you know, relationship or having, you know, a connection in that way of some form or having it just happen. And there was a particular person that she sent me this YouTube discussion, and I have sent it to Nagashiva to put in put it out so that we would have it there. But it's called Why Women Who Live Alone Are the Most Magnetic People You'll Meet by Joe Dispenza, who is basically a motivational teacher, but he discusses all of this in a way that is scientific and all the different things that change in the brain when you are on your own and how it engages these chemical changes and DNA changes and across the board, it becomes something that enlightens us because we're having to be with ourselves to make decisions and then again, enhancing the process of trusting ourselves, that, you know, trusting the energy that part of ourselves that we can continue to build. And it was interesting because for the longest time, I was telling the story, but the longest time, all I've done is talk to people about being lighthouses of energy, lighthouses of spiritual, you know, energy and this, you know, radiating this. And suddenly this man is talking about lighthouses. He's talking about emotional lighthouses and you know, taking the energy out and just radiating it. And it becomes magnetic because then it isn't about, you become able to work with your intention and be manifestors, you know, be like high in line manifestors, because what you're doing is you're connecting within yourself, within the brain, within yourself, and energizing the shifts and changes. And you and I know that as, you know, readers and as people that work with that spiritual side of the realms, we do, even if we, you know, have our own stuff we're dealing with, but we do connect with that vibration. And, you know, it becomes this moment of, oh, I'm just shifting into that level. And then when you start to do it for yourself, you know, like you just start trusting those gut feelings, you know, and all these things, you become this generator. And it's fascinating that it's a 30 some odd minute, you know, YouTuber at YouTube, and it was very and a lot of just incredible information. So that's my two biggest things that I wanted to give out on my side at this time. So
you know, I love that, and I think that I think it's really important because I think that all that you're saying is true, and I'll be real interested in looking at that video because I've always felt like I functioned better alone. And I think that whether you're living alone or you're with someone, I think you can, if you're conscious of it, you can create that. I was a single mom, you know, for like almost 10 years between my two marriages. And so I really embraced it at that time. It was kind of hard for me the first couple of years. But something that I've always gotten, and, you know, just luckily because of the personality type of my husband, is that he's he's Asperger, and he's an Aquarius. And so it's very easy for me to sit down and say, like, oh, yeah, you know, I definitely need more space, especially because he just retired recently. And so he's here now all the time, where before I had huge chunks of time, you know, during the day when I would do my work and I would do my meditations and I would do, you know, all of my creative stuff and stuff like that, you know. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I would do things with him or not, you know, when he was around. And so now, just a couple of weeks ago, he retired. So we're trying to figure out that that thing. But I think that even when you're, well, for example, even if you're not in a good space, even when you're in a crowd of people, you can feel very much alone. And that's loneliness. But
mm-hmm.
when you're aware of the need for balance of connecting and the need for solitude, I think that you can create that, you know, in your life. If you talk about it and get an understanding with the other person or people around you, and that can be a real healthy thing, and can really, really help with, I think it recharges our energy flow. And it's like we can tap into that, you know, that inner light. I love the whole thing about the lighthouse. And just that, you know, you know, get recharged and refocused or whatever it is that we need to keep spiritually growing at that time.
It definitely is something that just lit it up. And I was actually listening to it before we, you know, called in, and because I was getting pieces of it when she first sent it to me, I started it, but then I had clients, so of course, you know, I had interrupted. So I was like going, I've got to listen to this whole thing. And it really brought out a process of pulling that energy of ourselves back. And when we talk about empowerment and we talk about these different words and actions and things, it's really, it becomes something where we need the time to do it. Even when it eventually takes an external form where we say something to someone who has been trying to bully us or control us, or something that is not necessarily a relationship, you know, personal, but some situation. Mm-hmm. But by the time you are able to do that, in from having experienced this shift energy that you create by pulling in and reshifting and recalibrating, it's really amazing, because it's more about, I say this because I think I've said it more times on this show too, but the scene on the movie Labyrinth with David Bowie, there is the final episode. Yeah. The final scene is basically where the girl who's given her power over to the Bowie character in this whole fantasy thing, she turns and she looks at him and she says, "You have no power over me." And his whole visage dissolves and it becomes a little winged owl and he flies away. And it's kind of like the wisdom comes is when that really happens, is that we have our own inner strength and power and ability to create and to do these things. And yes, we do have the process of co-creation with people, but in a way that allows for this connection to stay in that level rather than to descend in terms of the energetics, to go down so that you can, you know, kind of feel that you've given this person some, you know, some aspect of yourself, and thus that will create, you know, what you're doing. It's really fascinating. And he just he hit the proverbial nail on the head, so to speak. So, and it feels really strong for, you know, us to utilize this kind of a individual and the work that he has put together in this way for people to, you know, it's not just woo-woo metaphysics or spiritual, which is very empowering and very important, but, you know, we get it from so many areas that it becomes like, so I'm not crazy, really. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, and it's kind of nice to hear, like, if someone is kind of presenting things in a multi-level fashion where you can actually hear that there's been maybe a couple studies done that, that what we're saying, it's like that, it just reinforces it in knowing that, yes, sometimes the intangibles, you know, can be studied, and we can know, you know, beyond just our instincts or intuition that, yes, this is real. This is, you know, a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, I got a couple little quotes here.
Okay.
One of them.
Go for it, darling.
I've got one by Albert Einstein, and I've got one by Cahil Gibran. And for Albert, he says, although I am a typical loner in my daily life, my awareness of belonging to the invisible community of those who strive for truth, beauty, and justice has prevented me from feelings of isolation. Ooh. That was Albert Einstein in My Credo. He wrote that in 1932. Another one, you know, and I actually gathered, I'm not going to read all of them, I'll just read this one other little one, but as I was reading, like, some of these quotes, my whole energy changed, and I could feel, like, it lifting, and I felt like a little light bulb went on, and I felt happy, and I thought, you know, this lack of solitude that I've had lately is really the thing. It's the medicine that I need right now. You know? And so I got excited as I was reading some of these quotes, and I was like, that's what's missing. You know, I've been so busy with ripping and running and, you know, dotting every I and crossing every T and trying to, you know, put things together that I have totally lost track of any kind of solitude. So here's Cahil. This one is, solitude is a silent storm that breaks down all of our dead branches, yet it sends our living roots deeper into the living heart of the living earth. I thought that was lovely. And that is Cahil Gibran in Sand and Foam that he wrote in 1926.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and that's a perfect one to move our show to its closing process here. So thank you, Deb, for those quotes. Really appreciate them. I think they are very powerful. I was sitting here getting little chills and kind of going, oh, I'm going to go off. And I had to kind of bring my feet, kind of move them a little bit to come back to the physical world. So obviously, if you want to get in touch with Deb or I, you can do it through www.readersandrootworkers.org or www.hoodoopsychics.org. For Deb, you can go through to www.beewitching, just like the little insect, .com. For myself, you can also go to www.milk-and-honey.com or www.elvira.com. And for the next show, which will be basically in 2025, it'll be January 1st, it will be a seasonal rebroadcast of the overview of the Wheel of the Year. And since the basically the platform has been moved from Blog Talk. So to listen to any episodes of The Witch, the Priestess, and Cauldron, including previous episodes rebroadcast, you just go to witchpriestessandcauldron.com and click on all the episodes, the link. And it will take you to the Witch Priestess Cauldron section of the Lucky Mojo Radio Network directory in the forum, the Mojo Forum. And at this time, we do have a an announcement based on, and again, none of us really thought that, you know, as we were making 6-8 months ago, our episodes and shows about the future being brought into focus by our shows. We will be doing a hiatus for 3 months, January, February, March, and in that time frame, you can obviously find our rebroadcast, and at that time, we will, there may be, how do I want to put this, we'll be having a different guest hostess that I will be working with at some point, at least once during each one of those months. And at, then at the end of that 3 months, we will see where we stand and what will be our future for 2025. So I've found that you as a co-hostess is, you know, there has been so much of a match. And I really, at this point, want to say I have appreciated all of the energy and work that you have put in, that we have connected with, and you're more than, you know, just somebody I'm doing a show with. You are a spirit sister. You are friends, even if we aren't able to be, literally, we're about, I don't even know, I've been saying I need to find out, minimum, I guess, of 1,000 miles between us, and we've never been in person, but I just want to, you know, say how much you have touched my heart and soul with all of the work we've done and all of the connection we made, and I want to say thank
you're gonna
you.
You're going to make me cry.
Well,
oh my goodness. Well, no, thank you. I just, this whole experience, this journey with a spirit sister like you has been just amazing. I just, I thank you very much. And yeah, I can't believe that this time that we've done it so far has gone by so super fast.
But, you know, it, and I hold space for what you need to be able to, you know, find and do, and life changes, because that's who and what we are, dear. And you are far more than just a co-hostess that we babble back and forth and talk about things and everything else. And I think that that's part of what makes, you know, our show our show. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I'm going to ask for you to say the special words for the last time for, you know, the timing we have set out, and go for it, Deb.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Well, I wish everybody a happy new year. Hope everybody has a blessed 2025 until we meet again. And until next time, all of our magical friends out there, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely.
Blessed be.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show, or ideas for upcoming shows, can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.